All right, let's, if the board will come back to order, we'll start with 1501, rulemaking hearing for the rules of the administration of the high school equivalency examination program. The State Board of Education will now conduct a public rulemaking hearing for the rules for the administration of the high school equivalency examination program. The State Board approved the notice of rulemaking at its October 7, 2015 meeting. A hearing to promulgate these rules was made known through publication of a public notice on October 25, 2015 through the Colorado Register and by State Board notice on December 2, 2015. The State Board is authorized to promulgate these rules pursuant to 22-2-107, paren 1, paren C, Colorado Revised Statutes. Commissioner, is the staff prepared to proceed with an overview?
Yes, we are, Mr. Chair. Again, these are cleanup rules, and I want to distinguish between the rules for high school equivalency program versus the accepted assessments for high school equivalency, which we'll take up tomorrow and with a different presentation. Gretchen Morgan and Misty Ruthlin are here to take us through this item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Morgan, please proceed.
So I want to begin by just saying that this is a little bit of a confusing topic, and so I want to try and offer some background to help make this a little less confusing. It used to be that in state law, the GED, which is a particular high school equivalency exam, was named in law as the thing that we did in our state to offer people a way to demonstrate high school equivalency. Last year, the legislature realized that by doing that, they, of course, limited what could happen. And also, I think generally people don't find it to be good practice to name a vendor in state law, right? And so they changed that. Our rules previously also named GED all through the rules. But as we mentioned to you last time when we introduced these rules, they also did that in a way that was duplicative of statute. So initially, what we thought we could bring to you was just the ability to eliminate all of the rules, which is like a cause for celebration, generally, in a state board meeting. But then we got another call from the Office of Legal Legislative Services who said, actually, there are two little parts that they think need to stay. That is that it be made clear that CDE is the entity that issues these certificates to students, and that CDE does have the authority to collect a fee so that CDE has the ability to issue certificates and also oversee the quality of the testing centers and the vendors who would be contracted with. So what you have in front of you is a set of rules that eliminates everything except those two parts at the request of legal services. As Dr. Asp said, this is totally different from the decision about whether you want to have more than one high school equivalency exam provider in the state, but the two are related, which is that you need to pass rules that get rid of all of the GED language so you would then have your own authority to offer that to multiple vendors, right? So it is necessary that the rulemaking happen prior to the selection of those providers if you wanted to provide more than one or if you wanted to consider one that wasn't GED. So that's why these things are staged this way in your agenda, so we can take care of rules so you would have then the flexibility given to you now in law, which is brand new, to consider more than one provider. The only other thing I want to say about that is that we asked the question, and we've consulted with Mr. Dill about this, about whether, since the statute now does say that you may consider more than one vendor for this purpose, which again is brand new, we've never had that flexibility before because it used to just say GED in law. Now that you have that flexibility, does the need for that flexibility need to be restated in rule? And in talking to Mr. Dill, he thought no, that you have that flexibility without having it in rule. So I just want you to know that was something considered, but on his advice, we did not include that in the rules because generally when you don't need it, we don't put it there. And so because that authority is clear in the statute, he didn't feel you needed to have it repeated in the rules here. I think you've heard, obviously, in public comment, there are a lot of people with strong feelings about the decision you have tomorrow, you know, about which exams to choose. We only heard from a couple of people in terms of feedback about these rules. Some of them sent us feedback about the rules when really they were talking about the exam, and so we've only now we're going to talk to you about the two we received that are actually about the rule decision. One of them was feedback from someone in the field asking that the part that OLLS asked us to add about us being the credentialing entity be added. And since they also asked for that, that is in the rules. The second one Actually, it was just OLLS.
Yeah, it's about that, too.
That's the only one, which was about the fees. So those are the only two pieces of feedback we received about the rules specifically. I mean, again, we received a lot of feedback about the exam selection. You'll get all of that, and you have it in your materials, actually, for your consideration of your decision tomorrow on that item. So I think you have some folks who've signed up who want to comment about these rules. And unless you have clarifying questions for us, we would welcome that to happen now, and then you could have your discussion and decision.
Can we set the fee?
The fee that comes to CDE, that's been consistent.
I don't know what it is.
It's currently $7.50 per module, and there are four modules within our current test. So that's $30.
$30 a test.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Seems reasonable enough.
Yeah.
And it's been consistent for years.
Yeah, okay. We're not suggesting any change in that.
All right. Very good. Questions from members of the committee? Ms. Rankin?
I just have a question that I don't understand. Gretchen, number 2.00 and then in front 3. The high school equivalency examination, the state board approved battery of tests.
Mm-hmm.
State board approved that are designed to measure. Okay, so what that means is, I don't know.
What that means is when someone goes, like currently under the GED, and again you'll learn about other options tomorrow. The GED is not a single exam. They sit for multiple exams. So it's referring to the battery of exams that are part of proving high school equivalency.
Yep. And that's a statutory definition that's reflected in the rules to then define the mention of that further in rule.
But that is only for the GED as we know it today. No.
The other exams also do have multiple modules. So it would be true for all of them.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
So it's flexible.
So anybody that comes forth, you won't even bring it to us unless it's approved and aligned with everything that we do, correct?
We're bringing you actually three options because three folks submitted information to us, and it was a competitive bidding process.
Yes.
And then we're bringing you the feedback from the people in the competitive review committee, which is not always definitive, if the members disagree.
You're answering
for example.
My question. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep.
And then my next one is, if you do have this here, how long does that go for? I mean, what if a year from now, 10 more people come forward, then do we end up doing it again and adding more or reviewing the whole thing? I don't understand.
I don't know, actually, that statute dictates a frequency, does it, of revisiting?
It does not, but I think are you asking about the exam selection process and not rulemaking? Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yeah.
So within the exam selection process, there's not a standard procurement term. There's one that's suggested, and I believe it's 3 years.
Okay. And that's not in the rules. And so this rule is pretty flexible as far as how many come in.
Yeah,
correct.
Thank you. That answered it.
Yep.
Okay. Further questions about these rules?
I don't think it's
about
the rules.
It's really nice to see all of the strikers.
Yep. We're still happy. Yeah.
It's really sad.
Thank you.
You use so much paper to do.
So your question, Ms. Garf, was not about the rules,
I think it'll be appropriate, regardless of when I ask it, if it's in the other part of the conversation.
Go ahead.
Well, interesting to hear. I don't want to get muddied up with, is this rules or is this test selection discussion? I'm just not going to go there.
Okay.
But I found it interesting all the comments about the quality, the nature of the GED, and what some of the comments against having that be the single exam. So I'm trying to clarify that right now. Is it an access question? Is it a location, a testing location challenge? Mm-hmm. Is it because it's all computerized?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because, what about the test questions? Does it have something to do with the rigor level, the content of the test? You know, all mm-hmm. three of them claim to be aligned with our standards. Couple of people phrased it as aligned with the Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering what's that interpretation in the mind of the maker of that statement? Because Common Core, are we talking about math, the math and language arts part of it?
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, I think I'm right, all along has been the GED or the high, whatever the high school equivalency exam is called, it covers content areas that are basically an expectation of kids by the time they graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. So do we have clarity, and does the public think about it, that social studies and some science, you know, the basic, some basic concepts of science, principles of science, in addition to math and language arts, and really what we kind of call our core, our real core subject area. So I'm curious about that. I have no one way or the other opinion or choice among the three that we're talking about right now. I think they're all excellent. But it, I found it interesting to hear the comments that weren't quite fully presented for me to be able to tell where people really are on this. You know, the cost is a factor, too. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of, are we talking about the exam quality? Mm-hmm. Or are we talking about details and logistics?
Mm-hmm. Can I just respond briefly?
Please.
So all of the exams that you all will hear about tomorrow do include all four of those subject areas, language arts, mathematics, science, and social studies. So you're correct that it does include those other areas. And one of the requirements is that they demonstrate alignment to our state standards in those areas. Different vendors, you know, in the competitive bidding process, they may have you know, sort of certified to us that that is true, or they may have provided evidence that that is true. And one of the questions we'll have for you all tomorrow is sort of what standard do you want to consider about that? So if someone didn't, for example, provide us documentation, is that something you want us to require before establishing contracts, things like that? We plan to get into that tomorrow. The other thing I just want to let you know is that tomorrow the three vendors actually will be here and presenting to you. So you're going to have ample opportunity to ask them direct questions about these things. So where in the competitive bidding process maybe something wasn't eliminated, which is not uncommon, right? People submit what they have. The reviewers deal with what's been submitted. You'll have the purview to ask questions beyond that when you have them in front of you tomorrow.
Thanks.
Okay, any further questions from members? Now we'll proceed to public testimony. Frank Watrous.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is Frank Watrous. I'm a senior policy analyst with the Bell Policy Center. I have two quick comments for you to update from the written comments that we previously provided to you that are in your package in front of you that were submitted before some of the latest changes in this. So my two comments are sort of updates to what we have there. The first is an important and non-substantive comment. And that is that I want to simply acknowledge and thank staff from the department for reaching out to stakeholders when they heard about our concerns about the full repeal of this rule. This is an extremely important program, just as you heard about this morning. There are literally thousands of students who are affected by this. There are 340,000 adults of working age in this state that do not have a high school diploma or the equivalent. So this is a critical issue and a critical program, and many stakeholders were concerned when the full repeal was going to take place. So I just want to thank the staff for reaching out and seeking input on what should be retained. My second comment is important and substantive, I hope, although it sounds like I'm glad to hear that there was discussion about whether these rules should explicitly identify your authority to be able to select more than one examination as being approved in the state. We don't believe that the rules as they are written and in front of you right here fully acknowledge or represent that authority to the person who might be looking at these rules and make it really clear that you have that authority to approve more than one examination in the state. There are four places in the one-page document where the approved high school equivalency examination is referred to in the singular. And whether you're required to or not, or whether it's necessary to or not, we believe that it would be valuable for you to express that in those four places that you have the authority to approve more than one. So looking through here, and it would be the simple addition of parentheses with an S in it, to show plural rather than singular. In the last sentence in 1.00, approve the high school equivalency examinations, parentheses with an S. In 2.002, same thing at the end of the last sentence, the state board approved high school equivalency examinations, in parentheses, to show that that's a possibility, but not necessarily something that you will decide. Many of us hope that you will, but we want you to be clear on your authority there. And then also in the 2003, high school equivalency examinations there, and then in 4.00, the department may charge a fee, the high school equivalency examination, singular now, we'd ask for you to make that plural. And again, not trying to make a legal argument for whether it's necessary or not, but certainly just trying to say for the clarity of understanding of what your authority is and what the options are, we would urge you to make that change. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Watchers. Let's see, Anna May Lindsay.
Yes.
Please join us.
Thank you very much. I have folders for each of you. May I please hand them out?
Yeah, Ms. Birdsell will take care of you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, members of the Colorado State Board of Education. My name is Anna Mae Rael Lindsay. I come to you from the San Luis Valley, where I am an adult ed educator. I'm also the president of CAPA, which is the Colorado Adult Education Professional Association. And today I am here to represent CAPA. I appreciate that I can be here today to follow up on the two letters that I sent. You probably recognize my name. The letters that were sent on September 22nd and on November 3rd regarding the high school equivalency program. CAPA, first of all, I want to explain a little bit about CAPA if you don't know. It's an organization dedicated to provide leadership and professional development to the field of adult education and family literacy, with over 60 programs around the state that are community-based, college-based, faith-based, school districts, and other public entities. The adult education program serves over 15,000 students, learners, every year. In addition to the letters addressed to you on September 22nd and November 3rd, a petition was developed on our website, CAPA website, and over 100 members to date, I think it's 109, were signed off, expressing their concerns over the rulemaking and the RFA and the approval of expanding assessment options leading to the high school equivalency. As I told you earlier, I am a director of an adult ed program. I have done this for over 20 years in the family literacy and adult ed programs. So I feel that my experience in this just reinforces what I believe and the significance of the adult ed programs and its far-reaching importance. Pursuing a high school equivalency diploma is an important goal, whether you're 17 years old or you're 45. I have seen a 67-year-old woman get her GED about 7 years ago. It is a stepping stone to college or to employment. Not everybody that comes to the adult ed program wants to go to college. Sometimes they want to be able to get an increase in pay. But maybe they want to go into a cosmetology program at a community college. But because they don't have a GED or a high school equivalency, they cannot get a Pell Grant or financial aid. Whether it is a personal, family, or economic goal, the state of Colorado can only benefit as we develop a stronger workforce with more self-sufficient citizens moving out of poverty. And as you all know, in the San Luis Valley, we have a lot of folks who are economically disadvantaged. And they could certainly use the education to get them out of that rut. Ladies and gentlemen, I stand before you as an experienced educator, as president of CAPA, and its membership to urge you to carefully consider the rulemaking process in order to ensure student and program success. We strongly recommend that you consider input throughout the state, from whatever means, from the many experienced educators around the state in adopting policies, rules, regulations concerning the adult ed program. Given the actions in many other states across the country to expand assessment options, the RFA is not only necessary, it is crucial to student success. Providing options for high school equivalency assessments would recognize the variety of learning styles, testing format preferences, financial circumstances, life goals, and post-secondary or workforce desires. Having said this, we again urge you to take measures to give Coloradoans a choice of exams that are accepted in many other states to document high school equivalency. The recently passed WIOA, the Workforce Innovative Opportunity Act, was created, quote, so that our domestic workforce has the guidance and pathways needed to obtain required skills, end of quote. In order to meet these new challenges, we must work together to give our learners the instruction and the tools for success. Thank you again for having me here, and for listening, and for your attention.
Thank you. Shirley Penn.
Penn, and I have been an adult educator. I'm retired from being an adult educator. I've taught in adult education, was the director for 23 years. Mm-hmm. I've also been on the CAPA board for 10 years and am a past president. I'm also a part of the High School Equivalency Task Force. You have before you today some important decisions about the rules. And I would like to echo what Frank Watrous has said. We appreciate the Department of Education engaging with us in dialogue over the rules and regulations that are before us today. We've had several discussions, and unfortunately, I don't think we've come to a consensus yet. So what I would like to do is just talk about that a little bit. The first kind of, in October, I think, the rules were to be all abolished. If you look at what you got back in October, every rule was redlined. We were concerned. We understand that we don't want to overregulate, but we think that for basic program operation, there needs to be some rules and some regulations and some guidelines that are there for all stakeholders, so that we're speaking a common language and we have common expectations. We believe that rules protect students, protect programs, and protect the Department of Education from misunderstandings and conflicts. Having said that, like I said in the beginning, all rules were to be abolished. Then after some discussion, the department has resubmitted those proposed rules to you. They do include some of the very core basic principles of issuing a high school equivalency diploma. It states that the department has the authority to issue and refers to several other basic principles. I think where the difference lies in how we read the rules. I think under the interpretation that comes from the Department of Education, they feel that all the old rules actually were from the GED testing company. As someone who's been around for 23 years, I disagree, and I feel like some of those rules are there to maintain quality and establish some order and some oversight on behalf of the Colorado Department of Education. I've outlined 12 areas or 12 questions that I think will be left unanswered if all rules are abolished. And I feel like that we do need to have certain expectations of all the stakeholders that will allow for smooth operation and for a dynamic adult education program in the state. And to speak of the fees that are being charged to our students, that's okay, that's fine. But how is that money being utilized? Is it being utilized to help us have a strong program in the state? Are there expectations from the department that will help us maneuver through all the changes that are coming about and ensure program quality? And I think those rules that are listed in the 11 pages that were given to you originally in October, and kind of my Reader's Digest version of those rules will point some areas where we might have a misunderstanding if there's not some type of rule or regulation in place. And we feel like the fees of the students should go toward building the quality of the program. And so it is my request today that I don't think we're at a point where we can say that all rules should be abolished, and I'm asking you to postpone a decision on the rulemaking process until we've had a time that there's been time to discuss these important issues and to clarify what is it that the Department of Education is going to do to ensure the quality of programming in the state, and to ask a question. Because we were told that all of these would be covered in contract. That if it's covered in contract, that means we're turning it over to the vendors. And I don't think that we can do that. I think that we as a state need to have oversight and authority to keep the program on track. So again, I ask that you postpone the decision on this issue.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to provide public testimony? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. Any further questions for staff? I have one relative to the last comment. Was mm-hmm. it the original statement that we were allowed to abolish most of these rules because the statute was specific enough to be self-executing?
Yeah, there were two reasons. The primary one was that they are duplicative of a lot that's in statute. The other part is some of the things that were in statute were GED-specific and GED-proprietary, and so needed to be removed according to OLLS.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Mazin.
So would you speak? I have candy stuck in the bathroom. Would you speak to... Shirley, was it Penn?
Uh-huh.
Would you speak to some of her concerns about the mm-hmm. vendors being in charge of the rules?
Yeah.
Now, one other thing, too. Mm-hmm. What does happen to the fees? So are the fees used just to administer the program through mm-hmm. CDE, or is there any... What are those fees Thanks. Used for? How are they used?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... The first question about the rules, when we would go about establishing contracts with vendors, we still would be beholden to the detail in the law. So in our perception, we don't have like more flexibility in negotiating with vendors than we did previously. It's just that what was in rule about that is already in law, so we're still accountable to both. We're still accountable to that. It just is only listed in one place, not two.
Okay.
That would be our view on that. And then in terms of what we do with the GED fees, I think I'll defer to you on that.
Yep. So just one other comment I'll add is
sure.
much of what is in current rules, so literally the name of the current rules are administration of
GED.
Right, the GED testing program. So much of this is very specific to GED as a test program and as a vendor, how they handle certain areas such as accommodations. Much of this you'll hear about tomorrow through the vendor conversation. And the contract piece will outline specifically with that vendor how the vendor will approach it, but also in partnership with the department. If that makes sense. Fees right now cover a part of an FTE to oversee the vendors. Also, we're responsible for selection of the testing centers and the testing sites, of which there are nearly 100 across our state. And then we also offer professional development in partnership with our adult education program and prep sites.
Okay. Further discussion? Yes, Dr. Schroeder.
Is there any problem with adding parenthesis S, parentheses, in the four areas that Mr. Watrous identified?
Actually, I'm going to ask Mr. Deal to comment about that because I believe these are in the areas of definition, which probably are repetitive of statute, but I'm going to ask you if that's true.
I don't think it would necessarily be violative of the statute, but
thank
I don't
you.
Think it's necessarily required. If I understood the comment correctly, it was more going to avoiding confusion if someone was reading only the regulations but not necessarily the statute.
Mm-hmm. So there's no reason not to do it?
There's no reason not to.
So I'd suggest we consider that.
Okay.
And then I'm still a little flummoxed about the, for example, what is the process for renewing contracts with vendors? That's in the vendors. Do you have listed online some guidelines so that folks know that these are, I'm not in favor of putting things in rules that don't have to be in mm-hmm. rules that may need to be changed based on situations
right.
and when we start all over again with the rules and they're mm-hmm. really more about process. Just talk to me a little bit about how these concerns, how someone who has a question like some of these can find
sure.
out about them.
Yep. So as part of guidance for testing centers, we have a 20-page process and procedure guide.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
To outline those processes.
Thank you.
Yes.
So it sounds like you probably would hit quite a few of these, probably hit all of these.
That is our attempt, yes.
Mm-hmm. Are they easy to find online?
It is. We're happy to provide that to you if you like.
I don't want to. I just want to make sure that others. I got my GED. I want to make sure that it is easy for somebody who has those questions.
We try to make it as easy as possible, and there's also a frequently asked questions section depending on audience. So for testers specifically or prep sites or centers, et cetera.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Okay. And for those that are attending for the first time, flummoxed is a technical term. It's used here quite often.
I'll make a motion if you want one.
Is there a motion? Yes. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the rules for the administration of the high school equivalency examination program.
Is there a second? Second, Ms. Goff. Do you wish to amend the motion to include the sub-S? Or parentheses S behind in the four locations?
Four identified locations.
Okay.
Okay. So that's an amendment. Is there a second to the amendment? Dr. Flores? Seconds. Is there objection to that amendment? That amendment is adopted by unanimous vote. Now we're back to the motion as amended, which is the approval of the rules for the administration of the high school equivalency exam. Is there objection to the adoption of that motion?
The fees.
Okay. Discussion. Go right ahead. Dr. Flores.
Are those fees really necessary? I mean, these kids are not going to take up all those thousands of dollars going to school, going through high school and
mm-hmm.
such. That's thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And not that we're supporting it, but, you know, that money is not being spent. So couldn't we support these kids for taking the effort
mm-hmm.
to take the test and provide the state with workforce ready people?
May I respond?
Yes, please.
So, unfortunately, our state doesn't provide any funding to GED. So in other states, not only are our departments funded to do this oversight out of tax funds, but also there are subsidies provided to students to offset the cost of taking these exams. Our legislature has not provided for either of those kinds of funding. And so this was the sort of practical solution at the time. This predates me in this work, but I think it was the practical solution at the time to ensure that there was some oversight and that the department could do a good job issuing certificates in a timely manner.
So not only are they going to pay the fee for the examination, which is separate from the fee that we charge, would it add up to the same or more, or would it still be logical for some students to go to Wyoming to take the test?
So Wyoming subsidizes the cost of the exam, so their situation is very different than ours. But the fee for every student taking it is made up of three parts. There's a part that goes to the vendor who provides the exam. There's a fee that goes to the testing center, which is separate from the fee that goes to the vendor who creates the exam and does the work of validation there. And then there's this fee that comes to us so that we can provide some oversight and issue certificates to students. In all cases, those three kinds of fees would be there in any of the choices you would look at tomorrow.
What about the SAT? When the SAT ACT is provided, do all those fees?
It's very different.
Yes.
Are fees considered part of our rules? Or is funding?
The only fee that is talked about in the rules is actually it isn't a specific fee. It is just CDE being given the clear authority to collect its fee as it currently does.
I think statutory, usually you have to have an authority levy is the fee, and the standard rule is the fee cannot exceed the cost of the administration of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume we're in compliance with that statute.
Yep.
So we're still just working on the rules right now. Fees are tomorrow's discussion, correct?
That would be, I believe, correct.
Yep.
Yes, they're set separately. Yes. Let's go.
So, if we repeal the current rules or replace with new rules, do we have to get spending authority again? Do we have to renew that kind of legislation?
No. Because that is in the rules that you would be adopting today, so it just would continue the same as it has been.
I missed it, I think.
It's okay.
It. Whatever specific reference there is to that part of it, just dawned on me. So.
Yeah, it's the very last part. It's just a single line. The department may charge a fee for state administration of the high school equivalency examinations. Frank's edit.
Further discussion on the motion to adopt the rules. Is there objection to the adoption of that motion? Seeing none, that motion is declared adopted on a unanimous vote. I think we should now proceed to item 22, out of order. If there's no objection, I think we have the program here to talk about the Capital Construction Assistance Board Legislative Program. And Dr. Schroeder, would you please assume the chair?
Second, we'll let the room clear out. Guess you weren't the reason that everybody was here. We're on item 22.00, update on the Capital Construction Assistance Board Legislative Platform 2015-2016. Mr. Commissioner,
Madam Chair.
Go.
We have with us, I'm going to start with Scott Howell, who works with us on the BEST board. We're here to talk about an update on capital construction, and we'll let Scott take it from there. Thank you.
Hello, I'm actually just going to kind of pass it off. I'm Scott Newell, Director of the Office of Capital Construction, and I've invited Lyndon Burnett to speak today. He's the Chair of the Capital Construction Assistance Board, and they've prepared a legislative platform for this year, and he'd like to address you on that.
Thank you, Scott. Members of the board and Vice Chair Ms. Schroeder, Dr. Asp. I'm here on behalf of our board today to talk about our legislative agenda. I think the primary thing we have on here is that we'd like to go to the legislature and ask an increase in our cap this year. I think, as you know, the program started out with a $40 million cap on our lease purchase payments, and we're bumped right up against that, have been for several years. Since that time, we've had other monies come in, primarily the excise tax from the wholesale piece of the marijuana thing comes to the best board, and that goes up to $40 million. The first $40 million comes to our board, and so far this year I think we're up around $32 to $38 million of that. The money's coming in. Then we just recently in November passed Proposition BB, which also didn't refund money to taxpayers, and the first $40 million of that refund goes to the best board, so we've had that income coming in. We had a meeting a couple of months ago with the treasurer's office, the deputy treasurer, and also our attorney through the attorney general's office that represents our board. And both of them have stated that when we sell these bonds, no one's ever asked where the money comes from. The state backs these bond funds. They don't seem to care if it comes from marijuana, excise tax money, or where it comes. I think that our board, or I know that our board, has had a lot of discussion about how do we make this program more sustainable. We have all this money coming in, and we can put it out in cash grants, but leveraging that $40 million has turned into about $700 million in building construction. So what we are talking to the legislature about is possibly running a bill to increase that cap somewhat. And we're probably not going to get too far ahead of ourselves because the legislature did give us permission to start up a new assessment program, and we're just putting out the initial stuff for the assessment. It'll be about a year before we really have those figures in. But there seems to be a pretty good appetite at the legislature right now to talk about increasing that cap, and so we're asking for your support today to go forward and explore and see what that looks like. I don't think we're going to be asking to increase it by $80 million or anything, even though we might have that kind of money sitting around this year. But we're looking at an increase of even $3 to $5 million a year somewhere in that neighborhood if we can get some legislation structured around that so that we can utilize some part of the money that we're getting in and really leverage it and go a lot further in helping these schools. I'm sure you all are probably aware that the governor's office is saying we're going to be adding to the rescission to K-12 education and probably not have any more money. And this capital construction program has really become kind of the linchpin for school districts all across the state, charter schools, BOCES, and the people that have access to those funds, which the only other one I'm leaving out is the Colorado School for the Blind and Deaf. So I think these reports are important, and I think being able to leverage that would go if we can get the details worked out in legislation. So are there questions to this point?
So first let me just clarify that for the board, this is an information item only. So we will not be voting on level of support, but we are thankful that you've come and shared that, and we'll expect to hear the back and forth that's going to occur across the street. But I don't think, unless my colleagues say otherwise, I don't know that we want to make this a voting item, and that's not how it's been presented to us.
Okay.
Colleagues, questions?
Pam? What do you mean by did you say an assessment program? You're starting a new assessment program. Does that mean you're looking at where the needs are across the state?
Yes, ma'am. When the legislation was created 6 years ago, the first thing they did was a statewide assessment of the facilities conditions in the whole state. At that time, that assessment showed a need of about $18 billion in funds. That's how far we were behind. But it was a one-time shot, and we've used it for a number of years, but that figure's stale now. So what we have done is looked at things, and that was part of an audit we had a couple of years ago, too, that we needed to refresh that and take another look at it. Well, once again, if we did what we did before, we'd have a hugely expensive assessment. It'd be a one-time shot of what's going on. So our staff, and to Scott's credit, people in our office came up with a plan to hire regional representatives, and there'll be four or five of them around the state. And we've just put out a
RFP
for a company that's going to come in and help us do that and put up a database. And so these people will be on our staff full time, and every building in the state will be kept current within 2 or 3 years, so everything will stay fresh and never get older, and we could do it in-house for a fraction of the cost of what a one-time deal would be. So as soon as we get these people hired in place and get this company up and setting up the database, we're really working to make it user-friendly so these districts don't have a lot of personnel, a lot of time, because the first time around it took a lot of time and people had to walk around with the company that was doing that. And so we're hoping to make this a little more interactive and a lot more user-friendly, but our staff will be out there gathering that information. Some of the bigger districts may have the capability to push that information through our system, and we're real excited about how that's going to work. But, yes, the point is that we'll have much fresher data, and then we can really target schools, the worst schools in the state. We can't go out and make them pass a bond issue and do it, but at least if we know who the worst are and the conditions of the worst facilities are, then we can work with them and more target our approach. We do a lot of that now, but this would sure give us a lot more better information going forward.
Mrs. M, you want to make a comment?
Yes, thank you. Leanne M, Associate Commissioner for School Finance and Operations. And one point of clarification on that, last year the last session, the legislature took up the conversation about should we update the priority assessment, and they did grant funds to the department, appropriated about $2.7 million to do the refresh on the assessment and get that current, and also authorize the department to hire the staff in order to go out and provide a sustainable method of keeping the assessment up to date. I just wanted to clarify.
Great,
that.
Thank you. Other questions?
How much money have we given to the BEST program, or has the BEST program received in those 6 years? Do you know?
We have put out in construction over $1 billion. I think it's $1.2 billion or $1.4 billion, something like that. Now, that's leveraged money and other money that's come through. We receive 50% of the income from the state land board land, so we don't get any general fund money. This is all money that comes through. We get a little bit of lottery overflow proceeds. It's pretty unsteady. It's anywhere from $50,000 to $2 or $3 million a year, maybe $12 million 1 year, but we never really know what that is. But those are our sources of income.
And is there a matching bond locally that goes along with that, or does that vary?
Yes, ma'am. All districts have some sort of match that they have to make based on free and reduced lunch and other factors that go into that formula.
So
if they go, primarily who this benefits is districts that don't have bonding capacity. Some of the rural districts can't even come close to raising that. So we also have waiver letters for districts that have unusual circumstances that they can waive part of that match if they need to, but primarily most of them max out their bond to get especially if they're getting a new school that'll be leveraged.
So totally in the last 6 years, how much money has been put into capital construction for schools?
I think it's at $1 billion.
Sure, Madam Chair. 1.24, since program inception, of that about 800,000 came from the state and the rest came from a local share.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I have one other question.
Sure, Pam.
So the process every year is you get applications, or you go look, or a combination of both. You decide.
It's applications. It's a grant program, and each district has to apply and put together the application, and our staff helps them with that process, hopefully, not always.
And then your board decides.
Then our board has a meeting every May, and we make a decision, and we rank that stuff and vote on it, and then we move forward and bring that list to you people, to approve first. And when we have lease purchases, then that goes on forward to the Capital Development Committee for approval. But we didn't do that last year because we haven't had any lease purchase projects for a couple of years.
So my question is, though, sometimes districts decline or are unable to pass a bond, correct? So they're offered this grant, and they need to make the matching bond, and it doesn't happen. Then what happens to the money? Does it just go back into the fund for next year, or do you ever try to use it in that same year?
No, because once we've given that list out, that's it. We do. I can think of two districts right now that came back three different times. It took them 3 years to get a local match passed, so they're eligible to come back and apply as much as they want. But sometimes it takes a couple of years. I can think of Elbert School District in Elbert County. I know they came back three times before they got the matching bond passed in their district, and we've had a couple of others. It's taken more than one try to get the voters on board to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Newell, did you have a comment?
Sure, just to maybe expand on that a little bit. When we were financing projects, because we were going through a due diligence process, which took about 6 months to get those projects finance ready, we did, during those grant cycles, award backup projects too, because we couldn't get them finance ready in time. So in those instances, there were a few that weren't able to raise their match, and those backups were there too. Maximize the dollars in that given year. But if a awardee doesn't raise their match, it does go back into our available funds for next year. And I guess it's important to note too that a bond proceeds aren't the only source of match that they are required to bring. They can use general fund dollars, other grants, donations, things like that. But I wanted to maybe expand upon a third bullet that wasn't in our platform but was approved by our board this last Friday at our last board meeting, and that's kind of program enhancements as we're moving forward into this next phase of the BEST program, and that's really to address this targeted outreach for schools. And two things we've noticed. One, when we get the assessment data updated, in our previous assessment, it just outlined conditions. It didn't really prioritize needs based on our statutory requirements, which are health, safety, security, top tier, overcrowding, technology, and then other capital improvements. So now we'll have a prioritized list, and one of the things we think would be a good idea is the ability to provide planning grants now. So if we get a list each year and we identify, let's say, the top three schools, but they're not poised to come to us for an application for a variety of reasons, we'd like the ability to give them funds to get the planning process started and at least move forward in that direction, since we have identified them as a needy school in the state. The other thing we're looking at considering is a two-phased approach if we go into lease purchase grants now. One of the things we've run into, particularly in recent years, is a really wild construction industry, and there's a lot of variables in that when you're building a school. So we're looking at the idea now of awarding a need in 1 year that would result in a cash grant to get them through a planning process and then come back the next year with hard costs, a real design that would then be funded through a lease mechanism. And you know, those are two things that we're also kind of considering right now.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add one thing we're talking about and really looking for is the sustainability. We want to be able to take the funds we have and get these programs as lease purchase stuff pays off. Most of these are 20 years out. So we're trying to start putting a little money every year so that we get to a point down the road where these pay off every year, and then we'll have those funds to go back in. I'd like to also point out that we don't use any general fund money or any state ed fund money. This is money that comes in to the Capital Construction Assistance Board. But we think that long-term piece of getting these to where we can stretch these out, we actually have the deputy treasurer looking at some stuff to see if there's something they can do to kind of space those payments out a little bit. I'm not sure how far we'll get with that. We do have three or four loans that I do think will pay off in the next 6 years. So, but we really need to get this deal where it's an annual kind of thing that turns over. And so it's a long-term process, but that's our ultimate goal.
Any further questions?
I just have one more.
Yes.
Do you have a draft of the bill that you're going to propose?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Further questions from members of the board? Thank you very much, and we appreciate your adjusting your schedule for us.
Thank you. I just have to keep my coat on. I just ironed the front of my shirt before I came.
Good point.
Thank you.
I should probably follow that rule myself. Okay, well, since we're still ahead of schedule, I don't think we'd start the item 17 early. Let's see if we can dispose of item 23 quickly. Okay. Let's see if we can dispose of item 23 quickly. If you'd assume the chair, Dr. Schroeder, please. Recently, a number of us attended a speech by the governor in which he identified as one of the problems for local school boards the rules and regulations enacted by the State Board of Education as being overly burdensome and apparently unnecessary. So I took that as an invitation to work cooperatively with the governor's office to see if we could identify those rules and see if we couldn't get those dialed back. Although I'm not aware of the details of the complaints he's had about the, apparently his remarks were triggered by complaints he'd had from boards of education. So I would just like to request that staff from the department to prepare and send a letter to the governor asking him to identify those rules that he believes are overly burdensome and can and should be repealed and or modified. And if he would provide us with a list, I will assure him that they will be on the agenda for consideration at the earliest possible moment. And I would also ask staff to review any complaints you've received from local school boards about our rules being overly burdensome. And if you would bring those complaints, whether you think they're legitimate or not, to us for our review, so we would have the opportunity to evaluate those and whether or not we might, in fact, have a chance to, on our own initiative, remove some of those rules. And if there's, I just ask for approval from the board to request that the department send a letter to the governor asking him to identify areas of concern and rules that specifically could be removed, and then for the department staff's cooperation in sending us information. I would encourage local school boards to, wherever they find there's a problem, believe that we have some flexibility to send that information to staff, and staff will bring those to us. And so I don't know if that's a motion or acquiescence or however you'd like to treat it. Madam Chairman, I'll make a motion if appropriate.
Comments, colleagues? Or do you want to make a motion?
One comment, Dr. Ask. Thank you, Madam Chair. We meet regularly with representatives, the executive director, in fact, of the Colorado School Boards Association, as well as representatives of the Rural Alliance, to talk about these kinds of issues, among other things. We also have informal meetings with school board members at organizational meetings like CASB, for example. But we hear mostly around complaints around rules or other issues that you've talked about, Mr. Durham, from our interactions in a formal way with superintendents, and also in an informal way from superintendents. They don't have many qualms about letting us know about the things that they think are burdensome. So we typically have not brought those to the board unless they required some sort of rule change, some of the things that you've heard about over the last couple meetings, or some other action by the board. We try to work with our constituents to do that and to continue to reduce burdens on districts. But we'll make it a concerted effort to even be more vigilant about that we have in the past.
Great. And
so, colleagues, any additional comments? Do we want to vote on this?
Deborah? I was going to say, it's consistent with our legislative priorities that we want to reduce regulatory burden. So it's a great time to review what's there and what can we do to make it better. Thank you.
So I'd say we're in agreement with just asking staff to go forward, and we don't need a motion. Jane?
Yeah, I would also hope that as part of this discussion, which I completely support, as we found out today, maybe there's some clarification that needed around what is the role of the OLLS. How is the interaction? How does that happen? And why? Because it seems like today there could be occasions where there's confusion. If we create, promulgate rules based on statute, and then we're now facing it, we're dealing with the question of your rules are too much. So if the basis is statutory language, how does that help? What is that interim filter? What is that all about? And how does that work? I have public that would be liking to know that. When I say we have rules based on legislation, they say, well, and why do they get rules?
Is that question directed to?
Dr. Asp is writing like crazy. Task yeah. that we've developed.
Am I defer to Mr. Dill?
Yes. Currently, I know of no rules that have been promulgated by this board that weren't specifically required by one statute or another. Once a rule is promulgated by this board, it goes through two sets of review. One is by my office, and the other is by the Office of Legislative Legal Services that reviews all the rules promulgated throughout the state each year. To determine whether or not they believe that they are in strict compliance with the statute. So that is what we're hearing now. We're going through the process of seeing the results of the OLLS review. Most of this is extremely minor changes that they are coming up with. But if you do not agree to make those changes, then those particular sections of those rules get added to sort of a catch-all bill, and the purpose of the bill is to sunset any regulations that aren't specifically continued every year by the General Assembly. So that's the process we're going through now. Does that answer your question?
Sure, I have one more comment.
Sorry.
Thank you. I just want to add to Mr. Dill's point. I've directed all of the members of the exec team, based on either feedback from the field or our own review, is to ensure that we have not gone beyond the authority we're given in statute, and that and our rules do not contain things that are not needed. And sometimes we've asked ourselves some very tough questions about that piece, and you'll hear some of that tomorrow, actually, in one particular case. So we appreciate the fact that that can happen sometimes, and we use Mr. Dill's office to check our thinking.
So I guess I want to add. Oh, go ahead, Pam. I'll be last.
Well, I would just say that I think it would be much like which city council is it that it's Glendale rolls back an ordinance every meeting. I think it would be great. I think it would be great if our legislature next year, this coming session, encouraged by the governor and certainly by the State Board of Education, if we could start looking at what regulation we could roll back. I think that would be awesome.
You go over there and talk to them.
I will. I'll do that.
So I think my comment would be in relationship to Mrs. Goff's question. On our website, our all-inclusive website, do we actually have a little Q&A or something that talks about the process? How is it that we get to where our rules are that we promulgate and that we send out? And if we don't, could we think about sort of a general thing about how legislation and how rules in Colorado around education work, including maybe a small piece from the feds? In other words, what is our role and responsibility around education rules?
We do have some information on the website on how rules, the process for rulemaking, but we can take another look at that and make sure that it's really user-friendly and understandable.
I mean, why are we here in a very general way? That might be helpful for some who are questioning.
How bill becomes rule.
Would you like to have this back?
I think we're finished, and we'll thank you very much, Dr. Schroeder. And I think at the next meeting we'll have on the agenda the review of the responses from the field and from the governor's office on the particular rules that need attention. So we're now, let's see, should we take a break? Or you want to proceed? You want a break?
Just
10 minutes?
Five minutes, and we'll
start our, we'll come back to the Student-Centered Accountability Project, which is scheduled for 3:30, and we'll be right on schedule.